to a historic agreement on nuclear arms, and really believed that that was possible. And so I don't know that Trump is consciously mimicking Ronald Reagan in his second term, but there are some echoes there.
Well, I'm hoping that I'm hoping that some like Russian acrobat or performer doesn't decide to insult Trump, and instead he decides to grab go for the button. I'm not going to take this. I might want to taunt, but I'm not going to take this stuff anyway.
Well, I think people will be on their best behavior on the Russian side at all times with regard to Trump.
All right. Oh, my God. We're going to leave it right there. We have been speaking with Gareth Porter. He is an investigative reporter, independent journalist, winner of the 2012 Gellhorn Prize for Journalism. That's an important award. We congratulate you on that. We've been talking about his article, Pushing for a Lucrative New Cold War, which is up in a couple of different places. It was published by Truthdig. It's up on the Consortium News. And we thank you again for joining us on Flashpoints.
My pleasure.
All right.
Thanks very much.
Bye-bye.
That wraps it up for another edition of Flashpoints. Our executive producer is Dennis Bernstein. Our roving producer and producer of Flashpoints in Espanol is Miguel Gavilan Molina. Our technical director is Mike Biggs. For more information about the show, to listen to or download archived episodes, log on to flashpoints.net or visit our SoundCloud page at soundcloud.com/flashpoints. For questions or comments about Flashpoints, you can contact Dennis at DennisJBernstein@gmail.com. Thank you for listening.
Listening to 90.7 KBOO Portland. A winter storm warning remains in effect until 1 p.m. Chains or snow tires are required on all Portland area highways. Temperatures will remain in the low 30s. Coming up on KBOO, the dirt bag will answer your questions, including, is this cold good for anything in the garden? Thanks, KBOO members, for your generous support. Not a current member, you can become one by going to kboo.fm and clicking on donate. This KBOO program has been made possible in part by KBOO Foundation members and a grant from the Skyline Tavern Project, a not-for-profit historic saloon at the edge of Forest Park, dedicated to supporting art and ecology through live music, food, and horseshoes. 8031 Northwest Skyline Boulevard at skytav.com.
All my life, yeah, hold me close to your heart, but all else above, hold my love.
KBOO Community Radio is a proud co-sponsor of the Inner Boy Workshop at the Portland Underground Grad School on Saturday, January 14th. Marking the first anniversary of David Bowie's death, they'll look at illuminating moments in his career for inspiration to break through creative blocks and make work that shatters convention. Bowie's intense energy flowed into any media available, from page to song, stage to film, to canvas. What source did he tap? Join them and find your inner Bowie. Again, that's Saturday, January 14th at Southeast Uplift, 3534 Southeast Main Street. More information can be found at kboo.fm on the right-hand side of the homepage under Community Events.
Turn on the thin white tube, throwing darts in lovers' eyes.
This KBOO program has been made possible in part by KBOO Foundation members and a grant from The Garden Spout, specializing in indoor gardening equipment, including horticultural lighting, environmental control, hydroponic and organic nutrients, and pest control. The Garden Spout is located at 4532 Southeast 63rd, just south of Foster in Portland. Information at 503-788-GROW.
Well, good morning. We've reached the second Wednesday of the month at 11 o'clock. It's time for the Dirt Bag. Good morning, Glenn Andreessen. Here beside you now until noon, live and in the hinterlands, although they're not as hinter as they are in Portland. Jim, you on the phone?
Yeah, I'm here, Glenn.
Yeah, boy, you don't have nearly the onslaught there.
No, I think we got spared somehow, but we got maybe an inch of snow out here.
What's the temperature?
Last time I looked, it was 30, but I think It's up a bit above that now.
Yeah.
What about you?
Oh, I think when I left, it was about 28 degrees, and but I don't know exactly what it is now, but not cold, and the wind is still somewhat of a factor, but it's beautiful. Beautiful
yeah,
out there.
When I was a kid growing up in Portland, this weather like this was like paradise. We, sweating and, all that stuff. But actually these days, I just prefer not to do this. Rain would be great.
Yeah, rain's on the way, but not now. Well, we've got a full show. We're going ahead with it. I made it in thanks to TriMet, doing very well. And actually thanks to Paul and Derek here at the station. They're about the two-thirds of who is here now. Usually this place is bustling, but not today. Well, now Paul has left, so.
Well, Glenn, if the listeners could give you a round of applause, I think that they should do so for tenacity.
Hopefully we have lots of listeners then today. And if they have any gardening questions, we would gladly take them. 503-231-8187. A full show. We'll be talking about pruning, dormant pruning. Now's the time. Well, not today. Probably not any time in the next week. Also, if you're planning on doing any type of grafting, we'll tell you how to gather that scion wood, all important. And we can mention the Home Orchard Society's, what do they call that now? The Fruit Propagation Fair, is it?
Well, there's that, plus there's grafting workshops, too.
So, yeah, yeah.
Grafting class. And so, yeah, there's lots of ways to undertake that magical process of making two pieces of wood into one.
Yep. Let's see, plant of the month, fava beans. I don't believe we've talked about that. Talk about the edible fava beans and also cover crop. They're both, actually it can act as a cover crop, but there are some that are more edible than the others, we might say. Jim has an interesting, I don't know if you want to call it a essay, or at least an opinion on the farmland protection that the state of Oregon has. And we will talk about on our second now Dirtbag Dictionary, the chilling requirements or the chill hours. Hopefully Jim can talk about that today. Answering the question, does this cold do any good in the garden? Well, kind of.
Yeah.
We might also want to delve into the idea that does cold kill slugs? Yeah, the short answer is going to be no. I mean, if it got very cold, it might kill a few or a few slug eggs, but no, this is nothing.
I imagine if you could somehow get the slugs to go out and crawl around.
Yes. That's not going to happen, right?
No.
Okay, and we've got the garden snumper, half past the hour. All right. Well, any events, Jim?
Well, you mentioned them a little bit. The Home Orchard Society stuff. There's a workshop a couple of workshops going on. There's a fruit tree pruning class on February 4th. And this is out at the Home Orchard Society Arboretum at Clackamas Community College, Oregon City. And that class, and then on February 25th, there's the fruit tree grafting class. We'll have another whole dirt bag before that one, so we can remind folks again. But on those classes, you have to register with Clackamas Community College. And I would, of course, encourage everybody who's listening, especially they have plenty of time today, to go on the internet, go to www.homeorchardsociety.org. You'll get this information there. Plus, you can sign up and be a member of this wonderful group, and then we'll have our spring scion fair. We call it the spring propagation fair. This will be happening in March, where you can come and get all sorts of kinds of scion wood and graft your own trees and talk to people who know how to do that and all sorts of get all sorts of information.
We really talk up the Home Orchard Society because it's a very convenient and very inexpensive way to learn some great information. I don't know what these classes are, what, $15 or something like that?
Yeah, yeah. It's a real bargain. And again, it's not just the class, but it's also the people you get to meet and yeah. share ideas with. And the information is accurate, you know. It's like you're getting it from the people who've done it and know that it's successful.
Right.
And that's really important.
Okay, so those are all Home Orchard Society events. It kind of surprised me, it did surprise me, in that there is no, what do they used to call it? I can't remember now. The Yard, Garden, and Patio Show.
It's not.
There isn't one this year.
Nope, that's gone away.
Yeah, the Oregon. Jeez, I can't remember the.
I can tell you a little bit about that.
Okay.
The Oregon Association of Nurseries.
That's it.
Ran that show for gosh 20 years or so. They sold the show to another organization, which ran it last year, and that organization business decided that it wasn't worth doing it, apparently, and so they stopped doing it. Now, it may someday come back, but for the time being, it's no longer happening. So the only Portland area spring garden show is the one out at the
Expo.
Expo Center. That's correct.
That's still happening. The Home and Garden Show, I think.
Home and Garden Show, correct.
Yeah, probably in February. Okay.
Yeah, I don't have the date of that. But.
Well, it'll be after our next show, too, which is February 8th, which I do believe is the next membership drive that we will be having here, February 8th. I believe it opens on February 8th. So think about that.
And there will not be snow.
Well, thank you for your optimism there. Yeah. Okay. Well, onwards. If you have any gardening questions, 503-231-8187. It doesn't seem like a gardening day, but this is the time you plan. And we can also talk about some of our favorite seed catalogs or seed companies or other companies. Because this is the time to order seeds. Perfect time, actually.
It is. And, you know, I have wonderful memories of sitting by the fire, even in places where I didn't have electricity back in the day, where it was kerosene lamps or in the evening, or just sitting by the fire and looking through those seed catalogs. And it's so much fun because you just can taste those vegetables. And when you go to fruit tree catalogs, you can just taste the fruit. And, you know, it's almost as much fun as actually going and harvesting it.
They are very good writers of those catalogs.
I've done a little of that myself, Glenn.
I know. Takes a good imagination, and it's worthwhile to read catalogs, and you get a pretty good idea of what you're getting.
Right. And a good supply of adjectives, that's always important.
And what I always try to do is at least try one new variety every year. You know, the older I get, you know, I'm kind of stuck in some of my ways is what I plant. And, of course, I plant what I like. But there's always room for new varieties and experimentation. So please think about that when you're doing it. Let's just talk about seed catalogs here now while we're on that topic. I used to order most of my seeds from Territorial Seed Company in Oregon. Very good seed company. Have varieties that have proven to grow well west of the Cascades. The founder of Territorial Seeds, Steve Solomon, wrote one of the earliest vegetable books for this region alone, called Growing Vegetables West of the Cascades, still in print, and he has updated it maybe most recently a year or two ago. I don't know, Jim, if you followed that or not.
I don't, but that doesn't sound unlikely.
He hasn't owned the company for decades, but nevertheless,
right.
he still has the book and the knowledge, although I don't think he even lives in the area now. But I have since changed my catalog of choice to a company that is about as far away from Oregon as you can get, and this is in Maine. Mm-hmm. And the company is called Fedco. It's a very well-run company, just a family, but they buy a lot of their seeds from co-ops and have organic seeds, and are their prices are great. No shipping if your order totals, I think, $30 or more, which for me generally isn't a problem. And their catalog is not in color, and it's fun to read. He's very progressive. I'm anxious to read the catalog this year after everything that's happened last year. In fact, I got that seed catalog a couple of weeks ago, but haven't gone through it yet. I normally order online too. But very easy to order, and that's my main go-to now for my vegetables. I know we've had Marie Nichols on for the Nichols Seed Catalog, or Seed Company, or just Nichols. What are they called?
Yeah, Nichols Seeds in Albany,
yeah.
Oregon.
Yep. And so that's another local one. I know we have lots of other local, or there's several other local seed companies too, and maybe some of our listeners will let us know about that. Meanwhile, let's go to the phones. Good morning, Katie. You're with the Dirtbag.
Hi, a question. What was the name of the catalog from Maine? Was it FED?
Yeah, Fedco. You would think, I don't know where that came from, to tell you the truth, that name.
Okay, and then the other thing is the fruit tree grafting course at Clackamas. Where do you register and when is it? I didn't get the dates and the where.
Okay.
Okay, the fruit tree grafting class is February 25th from 9 a.m. to 3 p.m.
I'm sorry, and, what time?
9 a.m. to 3 p.m.
Okay.
And you do it, you pre-register through Clackamas Community College. You can call at 503-594-3292, or you can email Loretta, L-O-R-E-T-T-A-M, Loretta M, at clackamas.edu. And you can get a registration flyer sent to you, and it's $20 per person for the class.
I said on the air that it was 15.
Well, I was just guessing.
You were guessing.
Oh, okay.
Sorry.
All right. Thank you very much. I appreciate it.
Sure. Okay. We'll stay with the phones. Neil, good morning.
Hey. See, I have a question about pruning fruit trees in the cold weather.
Okay.
And I've always heard different things, but I'm just going to ask you guys what you think the thresholds are for coldness, where you should not get in there for either just light pruning or actually saw-type pruning. So it's take palm, stone fruits, figs, and grapes, for instance.
Well, Jim, what's your thoughts, Jim?
You know, we basically, it's funny saying, is like we prune when our pruners are sharp. And we basically, if it's not raining, in our climate here, we just don't get cold enough temperatures that I know of to stop pruning. So we will prune if it's reasonable weather. We'll prune when temperatures are below freezing. It doesn't hurt the plants. I think you'd have to get down somewhere in very, you know, close to zero before you might want to not do it. And that may be something you wouldn't want to do anyway.
No.
No.
Neil.
Just thinking that if you, you know, anticipated, you know, like 12, 13 degree type weather, would it still be okay to go out even if it's, say, 30 degrees that day?
Sure. Okay. Yeah. The nighttime, right. You know, you'd be pruning during the day, and usually I've not experienced in Oregon in days where the temperatures stay in the low teens during the day. So
normally they're up, you know, even in really cold weather, you're getting up into the 20s during the day, and that's fine, in my experience.
Neil, what's the kind of the argument against pruning in those conditions, for example?
Like you say, I wouldn't go out there in 12 degrees weather and do
yes.
it anyhow.
Sure.
But I thought that there would be possibly a dieback. If you pruned a branch, that the cold would kind of get in there and, you know, possibly do damage to a bud, you know, further up the tree. But again, I'm asking you guys. I'm not sure.
I think where that would be an issue is if you were pruning either maybe too early in the fall,
yes,
where you might get a little bit of new growth even spurred on or something like that. And then you get hit by the cold. Or if you prune maybe in February when the tree or plant is not completely dormant anymore and might start, you know, sending out hormones and growth to the buds and whatnot. But I still don't think that this is a prune. Those buds are going to be there regardless.
Right.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, in my experience, and there was one year when my theory was dispelled slightly, but by the early part of February, we're really pretty much out of the woods when it comes to like super cold weather, and mild cold weather is not going to be a problem. Mm-hmm. So I think that what Glenn is saying is absolutely correct. In other parts of the region where you get colder winter temperatures, plants come out later. We in our early springs here, we do have growth that starts early, but pruning has not, in our experience, been a problem.
All right.
And
Thank you very much.
You bet. He did mention grapes there, and we'll talk more about this next month, but I normally prune my grapes in February. Just weather's nicer, and it doesn't bother the plant at all.
Sure, and we don't prune our stone fruits until usually March.
Yeah, right.
Because we don't want to get disease. We want them to start growing quickly, after we prune them, so they'll overcome any disease issues.
Uh-huh. Okay. That's very good. All right. We'll still stay with the phone. Good morning, Pat. You're with the Dirtbag.
Yeah. Good morning. I'm a long-term resident of Maine and a lifetime member of Maine Organic Farmers and Gardeners Association. And just a little clarification on FEDCO. They were started in 1978, and it is a cooperative.
Oh, it is.
It's not privately owned.
Okay.
Yeah, it's a great organization.
Who's the guy
that's all I wanted to say again?
Who's the guy that writes the kind of the editorials and the inserts into the seed order? Sometimes they'll get a little paragraph of information on whatnot. Just the president?
Yeah, that I don't know, but it's a cooperative, so the leadership changes, and there's a very wide community involvement in it. So
okay.
I just wanted to make that point.
Thank you very much.
Yep, you're welcome.
Are you calling from Maine? Oh, would have been an interesting one. Find out how he knew that. Yeah. Okay, so FEDCO is a cooperative. That's even more reason to support it, and mostly of organic growers. I should mention too that in past years they would say something like in their catalog that this is the last year we're going to be carrying Syngenta seeds because they were purchased by Monsanto or something like that. And so just out of principle, they will not carry certain seeds from certain companies.
Mm-hmm.
I like that. Okay. Well, Derek, are you ready for our first musical break? Yeah, let's take a break here. Now, all of these tunes that I've picked out today have to do with slipping or sliding and whatnot. So the first one from Little Feet, Easy to Slip, it's called.
Five.
Well, that wasn't Little Feet. No, in fact, maybe some of you recognize that very distinctive voice. Mm-hmm. Yeah, that should be our stumper. I'll just tell you. That was John Lennon. John Lennon.
Who was that?
John Lennon. Yeah. Oh, yeah. Wow. But we'll get to the others there too. Okay, this is the Dirt Bag with Glenn Andreessen and Jim Gilbert on the phone from the farm near Molalla. Okay.
I'd like to say, Glenn, I was actually at a meeting yesterday and I said, we're actually between liberal and needy.
Yeah, me too.
I love that, you know.
Yeah.
And it's true. Every bit is true.
Huh.
Liberal Oregon. How many people know where Liberal Oregon is?
Is that near New Era?
Well, yeah, closer than Portland, but
yeah, okay.
it's just right here where I am. It's just like between, it's kind of like up Highway 213 from Molalla on the way to Oregon City.
Okay, that's good. Between liberal and needy.
Which was another small community that is. I mean, there's nothing there except the telephone exchange now, but back in the day, people didn't have cars to drive so fast around, so they had to have stores and post offices and things nearby.
Right.
Little communities.
Okay, well, we've got Barry on the phone. Good morning, Barry.
Hey, good morning. Yeah. Yeah, it's a great show you guys got.
Thank you.
I had a question. I was just wondering, it's not about the vegetable gardens.
It's all right.
But I heard something about some GMO grass that had gotten out of control or something down south, I guess, here in Oregon.
Yeah, I saw the picture and read the caption, but have not read the article yet. Jim, you know anything about that?
I don't.
Okay.
I honestly don't.
Well, maybe Barry has more information on that, but this is...
not really.
It was an experimental plot for for the grass seed industry. And you know, they're supposed to be contained. And the whole point of this is that this grass was along a, I'm not sure, some waterway of some port, you know, a drainage ditch of some sort. And everything around it had been sprayed with a glyphosate, I'm assuming, don't know, to kill the weeds. And yet there was this lush green patch. And it was these rogue, if you will, you know, I haven't read the article, so I'm speculating on how they got there. But, you know, was it pollen that was able to travel that far? Or did the actual seeds get over there somehow? You know, did birds drop it? I don't know yet. But it brings the point or the potential problems of the GMO varieties.
Yeah.
Even though they're isolating them, they're, we can't guarantee that.
Yeah, what if? The only thing that I've really heard about it is that the government or whoever was trying to eradicate it has just given up and they're just going to let it go or something.
Uh-huh. Well, I could always try digging them out, I suppose. But, you know, once the genie's out of the bottle, so to speak, or, you know, a noxious weed, whether that's, you know, reed canary grass or Japanese knotweed or these GMOs, I mean, they're in a place where they're not supposed to be. It's, you know, the best thing you can do now is contain it. You don't know if you can eliminate it.
Well, I just think everybody ought to really know what's going on and the dangers of the GMO, you know, getting loose no matter what it is.
Right. And there's been some issues too, I think, with Jim. He'll help me out on this here too. Of course, our listeners will help me out on this too, but GMO sugar beets.
Right.
There was something else like in Southern Oregon that the farmers were very concerned about.
Oh, the rapeseed, I think, too.
Uh-huh.
Canola.
Yeah. That's the rapeseed, yeah.
Yeah.
All right.
Okay, well, thank you very much.
Yeah, good. Thanks for bringing that up, Barry. We should try to get more information on that. Okay, let us move in now to our plant of the month, fava beans. I've been growing fava beans for years, decades, as a cover crop. I have never grown them to eat them. The variety that I grow, while they would be edible, I think all varieties are edible. Don't know that for sure. Some are better than others. Some are tastier than others, and some are more cold hardy than others. I don't think the variety that I've been planting for years, and in fact, kind of saving the seeds for decades. So it's kind of my own little microclimate of the fava bean variety, if you will. And it's not very hardy below 20, but with this snow, that's, you know, snow is a great insulator. So there's not going to be any further damage to them. But those earlier temperatures of 17 degrees that could have done them in. But so, Jim, do you have any? Have you grown fava beans at all for edible?
Not really, Glenn. I've grown them for a cover crop. And you know they are hardy, like you said. Although we actually had 13 degrees, so I suspect that if we'd been growing them, they wouldn't have made it.
Yeah,
it's been some years since I grew them for that purpose.
Well, the varieties that Territorial carries, which in other words would be pretty easy to get, are the Windsor bean, and that's very common. The Windsor bean. They also have the Aprovecho fava bean, which is an organic one, which is huge. They had a picture there, and they had a quarter, 25-cent piece, in the pile of seeds, and the actual seeds were bigger than the quarter.
Wow.
Pretty good size there. Yeah.
Is that supposed to be edible, too?
Yeah.
Oh, wow.
those varieties are. The variety that I grow for a cover crop, at least what it started out was Banner fava bean. This is also, if you want to do more research online or something, it's often called faba, F-A-B-A. We're actually calling, I've always called it F-A-V-A, fava bean. various varieties, other varieties that are available anyway, aqua dolce, sweet Lorraine for eating, both of those. When do we plant these? Generally, August or September for a May harvest. If you're planting them for a cover crop, that's probably September, October would be better for that. They're not very heat hardy at all for that there too. For planting, you know, sun is best, sandy loam, you know, good soil would be good. If you have not planted fava beans before, it might be a good idea to also get some inoculum. And in fact, I think that should be maybe one of our Dirt Peg Dictionary words in the near future, what an inoculant is. Essentially, it's a bacteria that you would coat the seeds with to before you plant them. Or sometimes you can sprinkle it in the planting row. And those bacteria then colonize around the plant, and it will fix nitrogen. It's a legume, which is why we grow them for a cover crop as well. But if you've grown peas or beans in that same area before, you won't need an inoculant. I haven't used an inoculant in about 20 years, probably. For irrigation, you don't want to irrigate for a couple of weeks after planting. You can really rot those seeds. That's good. You can harvest the beans when they're full size but still green, or sometimes you can let them grow and dry, and then just harvest the seeds and pods and then the seeds out of that. But regardless, if you're eating them raw or cooked, the beans must be blanched, and the mature seeds need to be shelled before eating. So there's a bit of work involved in that, but they are tasty when you get to that point there too.
Have you eaten them as dried beans?
Me? No, not that I know of. Right, unless it would be someplace else. But like I said, I've never grown them for edible ones. And by golly, what is today? The 11th? We missed National Bean Day by 5 days. January 6th was National Bean Day.
Well, since no one even knew about that, I think we could still celebrate it.
Okay, you're on. Okay, so that's fava beans. Do not overlook fava beans for cover crop. They're my cover crop of choice. It's what I use the most. All right.
And is that because of the vegetative growth on top as well as the?
Yeah, they're the nitrogen they fix. The flowers are very easily visited by bees and other insects, and it's easy to kind of dispose of them. They can get 3, 4, even 5 feet tall. They grow on a stalk, and not unlike a small corn stalk. And it's easy enough. For what I do is just, I don't rototill in the plant. I cut the plant off with my loppers and leave the root mass in the soil undisturbed where it has lots of nitrogen on the roots. And that nitrogen now becomes available to the plant that I put into the bed next.
Mm-hmm.
Don't need to.
And when do you cut those tops off?
After the flowering, but before the seed pod starts, because once the flower starts withering and the plant is triggered into making a seed pod out of it, it will pull many of the nutrients to go into that seed pod, mm-hmm. and then they're lost for my benefit, so if you will.
So if you plant in the fall, then you'd be doing that. You'd be cutting it off in
April,
like May or
April. Yeah, or maybe into May. Depending on what the weather is.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, pretty easy. They're a larger seed, so they're pretty easy to plant, too. I generally don't broadcast them because when you broadcast smaller seeds, like rye or vetch or clovers, you can just rake the soil, the surface of the bed, and by raking it, you pretty much cover up enough of the seeds so they can germinate. But that's not the case with these larger seeds. So,
how do you do it? You make a furrow and plant them in a furrow.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I'm not planting huge, you know, rows like you might be.
Mm-hmm. Interesting.
Yeah. Okay. That's what I've got on fava beans. Derek, are you ready? Can you do the stumper theme? Number 4 there on our list there. It's time for the Garden Stumper. Okay. Jim doesn't know about this Garden Stumper at all, but it has to do with the fava bean, believe it or not. This might be easy by some and maybe not for others, but what made the fava bean unique in Europe before the 15th century? Okay. What was unique about the fava bean in Europe before the 15th century? Okay. If you know the answer to that, 503-231-8187. Jim, we still don't have a prize, right?
Not yet.
Right.
But I'm gonna go use another line and call in, although I don't know the answer. But
yeah, 503-231-8187. All right. Well, let's, before we get to the Dirtbag Dictionary, tell us what you've been thinking about with the farmland protection. I think we're all interested in that.
Yeah, so this is a subject of great interest to me, and I thinking about Oregon and what makes our state such a wonderful state. One of the things that a lot of people have moved to Oregon recently, I suspect some of them wonder why you drive outside of Portland and all of a sudden you transition from houses and stores and all that to farmland. And that transition didn't just happen. It just all of a sudden people stopped building houses there. It was actually a major decision made by some very far-sighted leaders in Oregon back 44 years ago. There was a Senate Bill 100 that got passed, and that was supported by a lot of farmers, including a cousin of mine and a very far-sighted governor, Tom McCall, and legislators, which basically said that we're going to protect our farmland in Oregon, and there will be boundaries between cities and farms and forests and ranches. And so If you want to build houses, you have to go through a process of doing it. And all we have to do to see the benefits of that is to go to our northern and southern neighbor and just take a look at what's happened there, where you can just drive for almost literally miles through sprawl of various sorts. And, here in Oregon, we have this beautiful Willamette Valley, and we have wonderful eastern Oregon and the coast and different areas. And it's, we have managed to, so far, keep our farmland and our productive land and our beautiful areas separate from development. So the thing that I'm a chair, co-chair of a committee of a group called 1,000 Friends of Oregon. It's www.friends.org. And the goal of our group is to make sure that the laws that we have passed and the rules that have been established are enforced, and that we maintain the all the wonderful things that makes Oregon such a great state. One of the big parts of all this, of course, is local food production, because we want to have farms near our cities where people can come and get food, either come out to the farm or the farms can supply the cities. There's a lot of local markets where you can buy local produce. If Senate Bill 100 hadn't been passed and people were able to build, I don't think I'd be farming where I'm living, because the value of the price of land would be so high just because of its development potential. So it also to have a vibrant and healthy agricultural economy, you need all the support systems, the machinery dealers and fertilizer dealers and equipment stores and all this that also support our farm economy. And if farmers aren't here, those businesses go away too. So I'm really working hard right now to try to revive this committee that I'm a co-chair of, called the Farmers Advisory Committee. And I'd love to hear of any listeners who are interested in farmland protection. It would be really, we'd really love it to go to the 1,000 Friends website and learn more about it and sign up.
When you gave the website as friends.org, is it just friends?
www.friends.org.
Okay. Not 1,000 Friends, just friends.
That's correct.
Okay.
Just friends.
Yeah. All right.
1,000 Friends was one of the first organizations. There's some other states have friends as well, but Oregon, because we were a pioneer in this farmland and ranch land protection, that we were about the first. So, one thing else I just love to mention, it's not directly connected to farming, but there's a wonderful state park called Oswald West State Park on the Oregon coast. And Oswald West was a governor of Oregon back in the early 1900s. It's hard to even imagine that before there were hardly cars on the road, that he signed a bill that made Oregon beaches public highways.
Yeah.
And by doing that, it meant nobody could own the beach.
Yeah, that's just very forward thinking.
Yep. Pretty amazing, really.
Yeah.
So we have a great history in the state, and one of my goals is to help other people learn about it.
Well, that's a good report there, and that should go some should have some benefit to help people clarify in their minds why we don't have the sprawl.
Yeah. All right. And that's very important. So thanks, Glenn, for allowing me to do that.
You bet. Well, we do have some calls that have come in. Good morning, Michael. Do you have a answer or a question?
Well, I'm responding to the question.
Okay.
or the answer.
Yeah.
So you're talking about fava beans, and I believe they were used in funeral rites, and that they contain the souls of the dead, I think is what they were used for.
Well, yes, I did read about that was it Pythagoras or Pythagora?
Pythagoras forbade his followers from doing the same.
Right, for eating them.
Right.
That's not exactly what I was going with, but if we had a prize, I would give you one.
Okay. I couldn't remember the question, so I was...
Yeah, is there what made the fava bean unique in Europe before the 15th century?
Oh, okay.
So the 15th century is one key here. Okay.
Okay.
You know, what happened then? Right. Okay. But good information there. Good for you.
Thanks.
Okay, we have another caller. Good. Bill's on the line. Good morning, Bill.
Good morning.
Question?
Well, I don't know anything about the 15th century and fava beans.
Okay, you got a question then.
No, my answer was going to be favism, the fact that people of Mediterranean descent who have a certain gene die or get very, very sick from fava beans.
Well, that's also true. This is a very smart audience, Jim. We got to be on our toes here. I've got to be on my toes here.
And you said you don't eat the dried beans.
No, you have to.
I recommend them highly because.
No. I said you had to shell them.
Oh. Oh, okay. Well, they make a wonderful hummus, I think.
Yeah.
And they also make a great soup.
I'm going to have to take your word on it, but I have no reason to doubt it either, though.
Yeah.
Okay.
Great. Sounds great. Good idea.
Yeah. Thank you.
Okay. Do we have. Yeah, we got one more coming here. What about maybe what made the fava bean unique in Europe? Bob, you got the answer for us?
Yeah. I think I know the answer.
All right. What is it?
I believe it's the pre-Columbian, right?
Yes.
Columbus, right?
Yes.
Yeah, they discovered all the new beans over in America.
That's right.
But it was, yeah.
That's it. That was the only bean known, at least, in Europe.
Right on.
Before they were introduced from the New World, you know.
Yeah, the answer was in the question. You said 1500, and that was the dead giveaway.
Yeah. But isn't that kind of isn't that interesting?
Oh, it's totally interesting. I mean, it's all the squashes, the same thing.
I mean,
Colombian Europe was they didn't really have a lot of vegetables. So I think even apples really are American, aren't they?
I don't think so.
Apples are from Eurasia, Kazakhstan.
Oh, okay. Yeah, in the Apple Valley. But a lot of things were introduced from both worlds, exchanged from both worlds. Not on the best of terms, of course, but nevertheless.
Right on. Hey, guys, I love the show.
Well, great. Sorry we don't have a prize for you.
Oh, that's all right. No
okay.
The show is a prize enough.
Okay, well, that's good. Good feedback.
Bye-bye. Thanks.
Okay, bye. Mm-hmm. Okay, Jim, we still want to talk a little bit about dormant pruning. No phones? One phone could be coming. But I do want to talk about just a little bit, Jim, about have you started your pruning yet? You're probably done.
Well, trying to. You know, I'm it's just kind of hard to do it, you know. I mean, I'm not interested in going out and slogging through snow.
No.
So it'll happen here soon. We usually have started by now, but we've delayed it a bit just because of the weather. It's not nice.
Yeah. Well, I normally do my pruning in the summer because my trees are about the size that I want. And while there's some drawbacks, I don't need to worry about almost a foot of snow on the ground too.
That's right. That's right.
But
well, in our experience, you know, of course, the North Oregon winter weather, you know, we get some rain, but it's usually, you know, there's lots of days when you can prune.
Yeah.
And we just haven't had them yet.
I would say, you know, if it's icy or something like that, you probably wouldn't want to prune your branches when there's ice on them.
No.
I mean, just from safety standpoint, for one. And two, you're going to be dulling your pruners.
Right.
And three, I think you might have more of a chance to bruise the cambium layer or something like that, maybe, Jim?
Sure. And you know, I mean, here, down the bottom line is, Glenn, pruning should be fun.
Well, yeah.
I mean, why would you want to go out and torture yourself? I mean, maybe unless you're just, like, really into, you know, masochism or something.
Yes.
Like, I mean, to prune isolating branches is just like, no.
Well, Jim, you've had, you know, 4 to 5 decades of experience of pruning, and what you're telling us is that it's more important that your pruners are sharp.
In some respects.
That's right. You know, but you don't want to be pruning, you know, the proper cuts and things like that are as equally as important because we don't want to leave stubs, for example, on our plants.
Right.
Because it'll rot and that's when disease can get in and whatnot. So you can make any type of a cut in the dormant season, a heading cut or a thinning cut. Heading, just kind of cutting off the branch in the middle, and a thinning cut, taking it back to a crotch of some
right.
right.
point.
So if we have a long branch that doesn't have side branches on it, typically what we might call a shoot, we'll head that back to force it to make side branches.
And we particularly want to do that with peaches, nectarines. And this all goes back to where on the branch fruit forms. New growth, old growth, both, permanent spurs, et cetera, et cetera.
Right.
So it's
go ahead.
It's kind of complicated, but it's not. You just got to do it.
Yeah, and you know, once you do it, you'll sort of get a sense of how the plant's going to respond, what it does, and you know, it's hard to make big mistakes. I mean, unless you've got a chainsaw or something. I'd leave your chainsaw in the shed, you know.
So, yeah, although I do use chainsaws when I'm making major cuts.
Yeah, use it. I have a nice sharp folding handsaw.
Yeah.
And for anything up to 2 inches, that's usually satisfactory, and that's not about as big a cut as you'd ever make unless you're really got an old tree you're trying to do something to. Another rule of thumb, if listeners have an older tree they're working on, the rule of thumb is don't take more than one third of the growth out of the tree of the branches. You don't want to get too severe cuts. You can hurt the tree and cause just a whole lot of water sprouts and undesirable growth.
So if you're trying to, you know, get a tree going smaller, I mean, not going smaller, a smaller tree, you know, don't do it all in 1 year. And right. also, you just have to realize this, you're fighting genetics. If a tree wants to be 40 feet tall and you let it go for 2 years, it's going to be 40 feet tall. That's why grafting trees where you can onto rootstock that will keep the tree small no matter what you do, smaller anyway. That's what everybody does these days, virtually, at least commercial guys.
Yep. The only reason I think of for using seedling rootstock on apples, for example, would be two reasons. One would be if you lived out in the country somewhere and you wanted a tall tree so you didn't have deer damage. Another reason is to get deep roots if you have no ability to irrigate, then deep roots will help the tree will grow without irrigation. But in any kind of normal environment, a dwarfing rootstock is pretty important.
Still, you know, not a standard size tree, because it's still going to be 40 feet tall and you can't treat for fruit up there. You even pick it. So, you know, at least semi-dwarf, which would give you a 25 footer, so to speak, for apples, for example.
Yeah, you know, and of course, one thing that I would caution the listeners about is the words dwarf and semi-dwarf.
Yeah.
As a nursery person myself, I know that those words can be used very liberally, and you can talk about a tree that's 95% of standard as dwarf, semi-dwarf, but the rootstocks that we typically use are M26 for a dwarfing rootstock, and that typically, a tree will on M26, even a vigorous apple, won't get more than about 12 feet tall. And on M7, 16 to 18 feet is about the maximum height.
Which I guess I was just responding to your question about deer, for example. You know, a 12 footer and, you know, the deer are going to eat up 6 feet of that. So you may want a little bit bigger tree than that for deer, but deer only. But in the city, no, they should be as small as possible. I recommend. And of course, they're going to have to be staked, and there's other issues there too. And this just brings up the point once again that the Home Orchard Society is a great organization to learn these things, you know, for free.
That's right. Yeah, I mean, it's a tremendous resource right here in our backyard.
Yeah, even though it's worldwide. And while you're at it, now we can just briefly, we're running out of time here, for the scion wood. This is if you want, you know, if you say you have an apple that Granny is growing in her yard, but the tree is going, you know, or it's going to die. Or here's another scenario, and this has happened to me before, that one of your favorite fruit trees topples over in this snow.
Mm-hmm.
Well, now is the time where you can go out and gather a piece of that scion wood, and we'll let Jim tell you about that. Put it in a bag, a little bit of water that's shaken out of a bag, put it in the fridge, and then you can go to the Home Orchard Society, buy rootstock, and graft that little piece of scion wood onto the rootstock and grow out your own granny tree.
Yep, and so Glenn has said, the when you collect that wood, you want it. It's important to get 1 year wood, if you can. Size should be somewhere like a pencil size wood. And this, when I say 1 year wood, I'm talking typically if it's an older tree, or these are growth at the top of the tree typically. But hopefully close to a foot long. And you cut that little piece of wood off, and like Glenn says, put it in a plastic bag with just a little bit of water. Put it in your refrigerator. And then you hold on to that till March. It stays dormant, and then when you graft it onto rootstock and everything is good, it will start to grow, and you will have the new tree.
Simple, sweet, and fun. That's just part of it. Yeah. And you know, you don't get fruit right away. And if it's an apple, it could be 2 years. If it's other fruit, probably likely a little bit longer, 3 to 4 years. Persimmons take about 8 years. Which is why
not that long.
Not that long?
No. Persimmons, maybe if you're grafting a persimmon, it can be 3 years.
Oh, yeah. Okay. I'm thinking of something else, but that's why people buy trees that are 2 or 3 years old, and they don't have to wait as long for the fruit. But you miss out on all that fun, too. So.
That's right. And learning to graft, if you like to do it, I mean, once you've learned it, how to do it, then the possibilities are endless.
You'll run out of room in your planning space. Right. Jim, we have one. I think we have another call here. Great. Fine. Sonia, that's right. I'm sorry. Sonia, are you still there?
Yes, I am.
Oh, great.
This is just an addenda on your fava beans.
Okay.
They still grow them as a cover crop among the Mayans in Mexico and Guatemala.
Oh, they do?
Yes.
Huh.
And I remember when I was on a bus somewhere, a Swedish girl who was studying agricultural practices showed me a bean and said, "Isn't it wonderful?" And I said, "You've got them in Europe." And she was most surprised, because where she came from in Sweden, they did not use them at all for anything. But the Mayans use them both as an animal feed when they're green, and as a soup when they're dry, with cilantro and lemon, bitter lemon.
Huh.
And it is delicious.
Huh. All right.
And the other little story I'd like to tell you is back in California, where there are lots of Portuguese living in the Bay Area, one of the traditional things to do is to plant fava beans on All Souls Day, and make a bet with all your buddies, and the guy who has the longest bean pod on Easter gets to host a party.
Well, see, the other, I wrote down this too, that the cultivation of fava beans is so old that there is no known wild form of this bean. It has been used It has been used in Chinese cooking for at least 5,000 years.
Uh-huh.
So it's an old one. And speaking
thank
of old,
you very much.
Thanks, Sonia, for your input there. We're out of time. Jim?
It's been fun.
Indeed. Thanks for the not making the trip in. It was safer for you.
Thank you for coming in.
Yeah. Well, it wasn't too bad, and I got a good pep talk from our new AM news director. Thank you, Derek, for he's behind the controls today, too, so he's doing double duty. So thank you, all listeners. Remember, next month is the opening day of Membership Drive, and we'll be here. Jim, thanks a lot. Derek, thanks a lot. That's our story so far. Be well.
KBOO Community Radio is a proud co-sponsor of the opening reception for Giving Back, the Soul of Philanthropy, reframed and exhibited Tuesday, January 13th at 6 p.m. at Concordia University's George R. White Library in Portland. The reception is an opportunity to tour the exhibit, which illustrates the Black philanthropic experience, hear from exhibit creators, and connect with social justice movement leaders from across Portland.